Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, how are you out there? This is Cliff, your host of Earth Ancients, and boy, there is a monstrous amount of stuff that's coming to light all over the world, and you know, it's funny, Facebook, where I post so much information, is becoming limiting. As fun as it is to post there, and as many of you who review the material on Facebook, I am working diligently to get a website up because it's just there's so much I can't get out there. I need to have a repository, and this is the goal, is to have an Earth Ancients website before the end of the year. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it or not. You got to work. You got to feed the machine. Pay your bills, and then you got to do this. This is kind of a side, kind of a focus of mine, outside of, you know, living my regular life. But I love it. I'm glad you're here with me. Again, there's just so much happening out there, so many discoveries, so many research teams that are uncovering ancient sites, ancient relics, that there's just too much to list. So I hope you'll stay with me and continue to look at the not only the Facebook page, but the growing list of guests that I'm having on this program. If we go to the Facebook page and take a look at some of the things I've posted, one of the more interesting discoveries is these giant circles in Jordan, Middle East. And they have been baffling archaeologists because not only are they massive in size, over 1,000 feet around, or about 400 meters in diameter, they are perfectly round. And also, you know, there's figures within them. There's could be what appears to be symbology that is just coming out. And what's even more amazing is that these figures and symbology cannot be seen on the ground. They're only visible from an elevated perspective. And, you know, a lot of you go, well, what does that mean? Does that mean that, you know, it's ancient aliens again? No, we don't need to bring the ancient aliens into this question. It's just appears to be a period in mankind's ancient history, lost to us, where there must have been some form of aircraft or surveying craft or whatever. I mean, our guest last week, you know, Scott Creighton was basically saying that, you know, the there was balloons that were used to raise the stones under the Giza pyramid. Well, maybe they used balloons, but whatever they used, these figures in Jordan are huge, and the circles are massive, and they are well designed, and it just it boggles the mind. Of course, nothing's been found to date. No machines have been found that fly. No balloons or any remnants of balloons that have been found. But this, like the pyramids, like any massive structure left to us from the ancients, is proof of some form of technology. So take a look at that. It's called Ancient Stone Circles in Middle East Baffle Archaeologists. It was posted just the day before yesterday. And it's a photo and a link to a life science article on these massive circles in Jordan. Just completely amazing. Closer to America, and a place that I'm fascinated with and I've been to many, many times, is the discovery of Teotihuacan within the Temple of the Feathered Serpent, a discovery of over 50,000 ritual items. And the Temple of the Feathered Serpent has been worked on now and has been surveyed and excavated just a fraction of what is in there. They've just begun to dig around these tunnels. And this is something else that's very, very not only exciting, but baffling. And I say baffling because about 3, maybe almost 4 years ago, when they first got down through the front of the temple of the Feather Serpent, they discovered gold spheres, hundreds of these spheres. And it's fool's gold. It's not true gold, but it was a composite of flakes, and they formed these golden balls or spheres, and they believed that they were floated in some kind of water. And they found more of these, by the way, in the other tunnels. And this discovery led to a number of remote vehicles being passed underneath the temple, which is a small pyramid. And once these remote viewing rovers were passed through, they discovered, I think it was like 15 or 20 different channels or tunnels passing in and around the base, 30 to 100 feet underneath this temple. Well, that's extremely odd. And most archaeologists don't think too much about what that could be, but the engineers that I've talked to, and even a chemist, believes that there was some chemical reaction that took place with these spheres and water. And the fact that the temple is over a geomagnetic field that produces telluric energy means that at some point in history, that temple or a small pyramid was charged and was energized in some way. And how they used it, we don't know. How this energy field was tapped, it's beyond our current understanding, because we just don't have the tools to understand. My guess is this discovery, these ritual items that were discovered in the tunnel, and by the way, they have dated them to around 1800 to 2000 years old. They came and were basically placed there after the design and the use of the temple was probably complete. Probably the original engineers and the people who built Teotihuacan had left, and these offerings and these idols were buried there with probably, they're probably going to find human remains there too, after, because that's typically how it works in Central America and with other ancient sites. 50,000 years ago, the site was built, and then the people, you know, slowly left or died off or migrated, and then another group moves into the area and takes it over and, you know, rebuilds it in their mode, and, you know, they found this this entrance to the Temple of the Feathered Serpent, and they used it for sacrifices and things like that. They're wonderful idols that are wonderful to look at. But conservatively, dating this area is significantly older than 2000. So, I mean, they've done carbon dating, and it exceeds 4,000 years in many parts of this city, Teotihuacan. And I would assume at some point they'll date whatever organic material is in there. In fact, we haven't really heard about any dating that's going on. They're probably keeping it quiet because it's probably significantly older. So it's confusing for archaeologists. You know, because they get dates that are extremely old, and they kind of, you know, scratch their head, you know, what's going on here. Anyhow, take a look at that. The title of that, it's not really a title. Well, excuse me, it does have a title. The title of that post on Facebook, Earth Ancients Facebook, is 50,000 Sacred Objects from Stone Sculptures to Shells Found in Ancient Mexican Tunnel. And archaeologists say they could lead to royal tombs. So, fascinating discovery. I actually even posted a photo of a digitally enhanced image of the Pyramid of the Serpent. And you can see it's actually kind of pinkish, the actual tunnel that they have discovered these idols within. So really amazing discovery. So much more to talk about on the Facebook page. I am going to quickly discuss a discovery that I found. It's called, the title is More Evidence of Ancient Martian Culture. And the rover Curiosity, which is currently active on the surface of Mars, has been taking these panoramic shots of the landscape. And this one series of investigators has been zooming, actually taking close-ups of various regions of Mars, and in this most recent shot, they captured a small building that appears to be a portion of a Sphinx. Now, they say Sphinx, and if you read the article and see the video, they actually kind of reference a Sphinx, the Giza Sphinx that we're familiar with, the ancient Egyptian Sphinx. But I don't see it. I see actual structure that is actual artificial, which is very interesting. And you can see that photograph if you go to the Facebook page. The Sphinx, maybe it's the head and the upper body, but the lower half is very building-like, very geometric, square in shape. So I'm kind of hard-pressed to see a complete body of the Sphinx, but maybe I need to look at it a little more. But fascinating, continues to baffle people. How NASA can poo-poo it and say these are not artificial, I don't know. It's just too many people that are uncovering these structures for them to be anything more than, I don't know. I just find it fascinating. And I think there's really something up there. I mean, there's Graham Hancock has written about it. Of course, we had Mike Barra on the program. He's written extensively about the Earth-Mars connection. And that leads me to today's guest. Steve Meads has written a book called Chevet, The Dream Unlocked, and it's a fascinating look at these ancient caves that the Chevet caves are in France. And not only does Steve reveal a Earth connection, but he also reveals a Mars connection that Mike Barra brought out. And I think Mike might have mentioned Steve. I can't remember. I know Steve was a little unhappy because Mike goes into quite a bit of depth and maybe casually mentions Steve's name, and this is his discovery. But, Steve, are you there? Hi, how are you?
Hello, Cliff. Great to speak with you.
Great. Steve is originally from the UK, but he lives in France. He has lived in France, Hong Kong, and the Philippines. He feels that he is living a life of constant discovery and relishes learning and experiencing new things. A little bit more about Steve. Over the years, he has been involved in the paranormal fields, which includes the so-called ghost and UFO hunts. He has held the position of lead investigator for almost 5 years with a local group. I guess that group's in the UK, Steve?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
A bit hard to go on a vigil.
Wow. Well, you know, tell us a little bit about the Chevet Caves from your perspective. Now, we all know that they're about 30,000 years old and have been a fascination of a number of television programs and articles and books. But what did you discover about the Chevet Caves that are unique?
Well, I was watching one of these documentaries and I was looking at the images, and there was a few there that were striking me as not being as exactly as described. So I was getting sort of images of ancient Egyptian culture thrown at me from what I was seeing, but I put them down to coincidence. And it wasn't until I saw this hippo that I realized that that particular image, this particular character, was totally out of place. So I started investigating from there, because he's the one that actually made the penny drop. And the links that I found are absolutely incredible. There's various images surrounding this hippo that are also found on the tomb ceiling of Seti I. So... This sort of made me wonder, why am I able to find two images that are roughly sort of 25 to 30,000 years apart, but they're almost identical? And then I started to go back at the rest of the art, which I had previously seen and thought there was something there, and took a second look at it all, and realized that I may actually be onto something rather significant. And, of course,
okay.
It all started rolling from there.
Now, I'm looking at your website, and you have actually posted some fascinating photographs of this cave. By the way, the website is Chauvet, Chauvet, Dreams, dreams.co.uk, if you want to follow us as we discuss it. Steve has posted highlights from his book, but also what appears to be some updated information that he'll discuss with us shortly. The thing that I find interesting is that you focus not only on the animal figures, but you discovered a map of Africa, and specifically the Nile River. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that discovery, Steve, and the importance of that?
Yeah, it was one of those images which I'd previously put down to coincidence. You see this lion or feline in this in the artwork, and I looked at it and I thought to myself, well, that looks like the Nile region. It reminded me of it. And I looked at the rest of the lion and I noticed that its eye is actually above its eyebrow. So then I thought, well, that's a bit unusual. You wouldn't make such a mistake in comparison to the rest of the art that's there. And there's quite a few other little bits and pieces in it which were intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought to myself, well, just out of sheer curiosity, I opened up Google Earth and compared the two together of those particular regions. And the mouth of the lion is a valley down on the west coast of Africa, which contains the Rishat structure. The eye of the lion is what I roughly guesstimate to be a particular lake near Morocco. I think it's Morocco, if my memory recalls correctly. And you can see a very faint outline of the coast of France and Spain, and it leads you into the Mediterranean. And but these lines which represented the Nile, they've also got like a crucifix form there. And there's three tiny little dots just over to one side of those. And now I've found that a lot of that is also represented on the ground, especially these three dots. It's really fascinating because some ancient rivers were investigated.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy created this map network of these ancient rivers. Now, these lines on the map in the cave line up with those ancient rivers. And I went searching for these three dots just in case if they existed near one of these ancient riverbeds. And there they are. They're there. They're clear as day. They're up on the thing. And I think that's one of the bits which I haven't managed to get into the book. So, you know, you should be able to see those on my site if I've loaded those three circles up. If not, I'll do that at a later date.
Okay. No, I see the map. The map is you actually show the Bay of Biscay, the France, Greece, Egypt.
Yep.
At the very bottom. And by the way, the book is Chauvet, The Dream Unlocked. And my guest today is Steve Mead. So, Steve, how did these ancient people encode these paintings, and why would they encode them? Why would they not just create a simple map and say, you know, this is this, this is this? Why do you think it was necessary to make them kind of hidden?
It's one of those sort of things that lead up to like secret societies or forbidden knowledge, or you can only know the knowledge if you're in a particular sect or group. But what I think has gone on here with these particular cave drawings is that someone of advanced technology and ability has done this. They have multi-layered the images and they have given them multiple meanings. And for whoever discovers them must reach a particular level of intelligence and understanding in order to completely decipher all of the art. There are things in the art which I am yet to get a meaning for. Some of them actually completely baffle me. There's one that looks like a medieval knight's helmet, but that makes absolutely no sense. But it doesn't resemble anything else, so it must mean something. And the only thing is that I can think of is that I do not yet hold the knowledge with which to decipher that particular picture. But this is, you know, this is how I've been able to realize that some of these images are actually connected to each other. The art takes you from one step to another step. It leads you backwards and forwards throughout all of it, telling various different little stories. It's just fascinating. It had me going for months trying to sort it all out and put it into an order that could be understood.
Okay. You know, in your book, you discuss a professor in Africa who actually corroborates a lot of your discoveries and confirms much of what you claim. Can you tell us a little bit about this person and what she was able to verify?
Yes, her name is Catherine Asholonu, and she's from... I've forgotten actually at the moment. Nigerian. She's a Nigerian researcher and writer, and former lecturer in African cultural and gender studies. She was the former senior special advisor to President Olusegun Obasanjo on arts and culture, and foundation member of the Association of Nigerian Authors.
Wow.
She was also
okay.
A member of She's quite a well-known person. She was also a member for the United Nations Forum for Art and Culture. And she took a look at one of the images which I discovered. Now, this particular image is a mirror image. A lot of people might turn around and say, oh, yeah, you've been manipulating the artwork. Well, this isn't the only mirror image that was found. And it's done on the direct vertical. So there are no manipulations, i.e. rotations, to make it fit. It's there. It's straight in front of you. If you've got the mirror, you can put it up, bang, there's the full image. Now, in this particular image, it looks like a set of felines guarding a chalice, a cup, or, dare I say it, the Holy Grail. But there's more to that particular cup itself, the actual bowl portion before it sits on its stand. You can see as though you're looking down onto someone's head, and you can see the tops of their eye ridges and the shape of their nose, and then sort of going into the jawline. Now, Catherine has turned around, and she's realised that, yes, I'm right with what I'm seeing, but she said that the secondary image behind it is actually the birth of the first Egyptian god. And you can see in the background two mounds, which would be the breasts of the female. You can see her buttocks and general sort of gives you that impression. And then you see this head emerging. And she, of course, has said it's the birth of Atum or Amun, the son of the mother goddess in the Egyptian Zeptepi first time. And the mirror leopards watching, witnessing, represent the watchers, the cosmic gods. So for someone like that to turn around and give me all of this sort of information and confirmation on it, well, that was as incredible as me finding everything.
That is. For her to confirm that is pretty amazing. But let me ask you this. If this cave is dated at 30,000 years old, then are you speculating that the people – that actually did this, or one or two artisans who did this, were from a much older culture, or
very possibly.
Was it created as kind of a cave that these ancient people gathered in, and it was kind of a sacred society place or something? What is your hypothesis?
Yeah, to have been able to create art on this scale and this level with this sort of with the technicality of it all, it had to have been someone who had previously been established as a culture in order to understand and appreciate art itself. It is one of the basic forms of communication, but this is very, very complex, and I think they've created it in a way so that the message is held there, but again, like I said, you've got to understand the world and life around you in order to be able to read it. So you couldn't advance too fast. So anybody else who went in there and had a look at it would just see pictures of animals and think, oh, yeah, that's pretty. That's very nice. But unless you would sort of advance yourself or been initiated into the secret, so to speak, then you wouldn't have a clue what's going on.
Yeah.
So, I think there is, because of all the links of where the art takes you and the way it sort of speaks. I mean, I had to use Google Earth in order to continue following the story. And if we didn't have this technology of being able to use Google Earth, I'd never have made the links or the connections to the rest of what I've got, because there'd been no way for me to have been able to see it.
Fascinating. So if the cave was 30,000 years old, and then I think I read somewhere that it was it collapsed around 20,000 years old, 20,000 years ago. I mean, that's very, very old. And France is nowhere near the Middle East, obviously. So this must have been a very sophisticated culture. And from what I've read and what I've studied on my own, the Chavet Caves, the artist level of the actual rendering of these animals and the symbology is extremely sophisticated. An artisan of a high order, with various blendings of textures and colors and things like that. It's not a simple people. In fact, the heads of these animals are almost photographic. They're so perfect.
Yeah, they are. The shading and textures that have been rendered into it is incredible. It's not, as they say, you get these professionals and the experts who say, the majority of the time they say something like that it was cavemen that were off their heads on hallucinogenic plants. That, I find that highly doubtful. I can't imagine being able to create something if you weren't completely compos mentis. It doesn't make sense, especially the clarity and the quality of these pictures, that they're so precise.
Yes.
For it to be multi-layered and to find images that you can mirror on the direct vertical. I mean, even that hippo, he was painted 90 degrees the wrong way. So he had to be rotated 90 degrees to become horizontal.
Right. That's a feat there to paint him, yeah.
Exactly. And again, it's another technique with which to disguise what's really there, the content. They've turned it intentionally in order to upset the drawing so that you can't easily spot what's going on. You see?
Wow.
So it's another one of those little connections and kinks in the armor.
Let's talk about this Egyptian connection. Because you found so much in there, and this professor has validated much of your finds. Do you believe that it's a direct that the cave painting is somebody that had a direct connection to early Egyptian culture?
I think that whoever created this art was responsible for the foundation of the ancient Egyptian culture. So this could possibly throw in a spanner in the works, because one of two things has happened. Either the ancient Egyptian culture started when we currently believe it did, or it was up and running at the time that this cave art was created, which would then, again, possibly we'd need to redate the pyramids and the Sphinx.
Okay.
So,
if this cave is 30,000 years old,
roughly,
conventional Egyptology has the Sphinx and the Great Pyramid at like 5,000 years old. So it's significantly older. Okay.
So
go ahead.
Yeah, there has to be something going on there, because we know for fact that the pyramids have never sunk into the ground. They've been specifically placed on particular bedrock or ground in order for them not to be disturbed over the period of time. And what with the weathering, the water damage done to the Sphinx, as discovered by Dr. Robert Schock and his redating of it, then there's got to be more to what we currently know and understand. For this to have been all linked in and connected, there's more to it.
Okay. So I introduced you a little sideways when I earlier in my in the program when I mentioned that Mike Barra had referred to you in his book Ancient Aliens on Mars 2, and he specifically discusses a huge structure shaped in the eye of Ra, or isn't it the eye of Horus? More commonly known.
It could be either one. It's one of those two. It's
okay.
One of those things that a lot of people sort of do. They'll see the symbol and go, "Oh, that's the eye of Horus," and then their friend will say, "No, that's the eye of Ra."
Now, I have been posting not only his discoveries, but off and on, I'll post a photograph I feel is pretty close to the real thing from the rover Curiosity that's currently up in on Mars. But you discovered this huge structure that's very close to Cydonia on Mars in the shape of a human eye. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and how it relates to the cave paintings at in France?
Yeah, because this was fascinating. This really knocked me for six. This did. In the actual cave art itself, there's something that resembles a horse, but it's not a horse. It's been disguised as a horse, and this actual particular image has got is multi-layered, and it is the left eye of a human, and there's a human face behind it. But you've got the typical sort of black markings, as though you would imagine the makeup done on somebody to represent the eye of Ra on them.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the very first images which I saw, which I thought was just pure coincidence. But of course, once everything got going, then I realized I was wrong, and it really is the eye of Ra. So I was then looking around and following the story through the art. And like I said, I used Google Earth and found the same thing on the surface of Earth. And that has a multiple meaning due to another connection in the art. It's like everything gets confirmed. If you think you see something, then you've got to find the other section of it in the art in order to prove that what you've seen is really what it is. So I was going through those, and I was talking about them online. And then I saw this image that Gary Legere, I think that's how I pronounce it, he'd actually found this particular image from Mars. He's they called him the Mad Martian. He'd actually posted it online, and I was chasing him for about 2 weeks, I think it was, to try and get the actual location of this image confirmed. I wanted to know and be sure that it wasn't, you know, something
that somebody
created,
Steve,
just to get a chat.
Can you tell us, in terms of miles or meters, how far is this eye from the Cydonia area?
Oh, off the top of my head, I think it's roughly around 400-500, something like that. I mean, in proximity terms, that's literally nothing, but it's not exactly too far away.
Yeah, you know, I was going to basically poo-poo it and disprove it, because one of the things that most geologists and engineers say is that when you build one building, it's usually within a complex. And the unique thing about the Cydonia part of Mars, which NASA disproves, says it's all fake, is that all those there's a number of structures that are all close together. And one of the things that's unique about this Eye of Ra, Eye of Horus, is that it's a standalone structure, but it's you know, I think what's the dimension of this building? It's something like, isn't it like 3,000 by 2,000 feet or meters? It's a monstrous
size. Yes, approximately
that,
yes.
Yeah.
It is rather large. It's definitely noticeable. It's on the same sort of scale, I think. Yeah, I think it's on the same sort of scale as to the one which I found on the surface of Earth. I mean, the one on Earth, you can clearly see it from sort of 60 kilometres up. So, you know, I think we're talking about the same sort of scale.
What are you looking at on Earth? Because I don't know, I'm not sure what you're referencing. What building are you referencing on Earth? One of the Giza Pyramid buildings?
No, I'm talking about the Eye of Ra, which I found on the surface of Earth, just next to Namak Lake, below Tehran.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. That's the... it's a part of a volcano, isn't it?
I'm not entirely sure. I've found very, very little information about it. It's one of those anomalies which I've been chasing, but it does appear to have some sort of landmarks put around it.
Okay, interesting. But getting back to this Eye of Horus on Mars, the reason that I think Mike Barra was fascinated by it, and he usually gets very detailed when he starts analyzing things, is it has this massive entranceway. And not only does it have two what appears to be quite large entrance side rails or structures that you kind of point the way inside the building, but it's a massive, massive structure, and it actually shows girders and cross sections of a superstructure that that probably were used to erect and build the building. What else did you discover about this building, Steve?
Well, that was the main one which I discovered, was that sort of doorway. It's almost as though it's like a tomb entrance, as you'd imagine it. You know, it's like the ancient Egyptians or even the Aztecs and the Incas with their structures. You can see these two big sort of side portions that just look as though they enter into the bottom of the mound itself. It's fascinating. The way that it's been designed is very, very particular. There's a couple of shapes and forms to the way that the top eyebrow is designed, which actually is very comparable to a lot of the artwork that we see when we talk about the Eye of Ra or Horus. It's extremely well detailed, and for it to be anything else is rather strange. But why is it there? Who put it there? How did it get there? You know, there's so many more questions that we've been given.
What do you feel is a timeline for that building? Do you have any idea at all, based on your discovery of this cave and what you see on Earth?
Well, it's got to be at least 36,000 to 40,000 years, easily. And then, obviously, you could throw the numbers out there for as much as you like, because if there was the possibility of someone being able to come from Mars to Earth in order to create these structures, then, of course, they had to have had the ability to be able to have the technology to create craft to be able to do so. I mean, we imagine them using craft, but who knows whatever the technology they had back then. There's no way of knowing. I mean, is the Great Pyramid at Giza, is it a teleport device? Possibly. You know, did it work at any one time? Maybe, but again, proving that is another thing.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a connection to these mounds on Mars, this especially with this Eye of Ra and its possible entrance. But it's one of those things that we won't really know until we actually get there and are able to walk up close to it and excavate.
You know, when I see pictures of these buildings, and they definitely are buildings, I posted some investigator believes is a small sphinx on Mars.
Yes,
Why they don't drive these rovers close to these buildings, and for all we know, they've already done it, but they're just not telling us, and give us, you know, some good close-ups of these structures is beyond me. But I guess we'll just have to wait till somebody divulges that information. Or it may be another country. We know that India just shot off a satellite that's circling Mars. Maybe we'll get some new photographs. And then the EU has their Mars mission satellite that has taken new photographs of the Cydonia region and have actually verified that the face on Mars is an actual structure. It's an actual large, artificially constructed building of some kind. So until we can get more verification, I guess we're just going to have to cross our fingers and wait until they say, yeah, it looks like there was some form of civilization on the surface of Mars. What do you think about that, Steve?
I think it's correct. I think that there was some sort of civilization there at some point. The evidence, all of the evidence points towards it. There's so many different things which have been found that a lot of people have tried to debunk by. I believe that the other week someone spotted the possibility of a thigh bone being on the surface. Now, obviously, it was like fossilized or crystallized in some form, but I saw the picture and it did look extremely like a thigh bone. And I think that the only reason why that the powers that be aren't telling us is because it upsets their little game or whatever it is that's going on around the world globally. It's one of those people want them to confirm it and to say yes, you know, this is our origins or we were visited, etc. I think the evidence is out there and there's plenty of it available for everyone to go and have a look at. It's making your mind up for yourself. If you're happy with deciding that, yeah, once you've reviewed all the evidence that, yes, there was something going on, then why worry about what the powers that be say? The only thing with that is that a lot of people need the powers that be to be able to turn around and say, well, look what we found. This is what we've got. And, yeah, you were right. Well, we were wrong, even if they did that. They wouldn't admit to the fact that they'd already previously known it all and had collected all this data before we'd even had a chance to look at it. Because many of these photos and videos, they all get manipulated in some manner or form before they get released.
Yeah, and Mike Barra has all that in his book. He shows the before and after. Yeah,
so there's a lot of that manipulation going on. There's still this cat and mouse. But again, is it like NASA trying to keep that information away from other countries and governments and, you know, but why? It doesn't make sense as to why. I can't understand how it'd be beneficial for them just to keep it to themselves.
So what else do you have? I think you mentioned before the program the hunt for Leonardo's cave and that connection. Do you have some other information for us that you'd like to discuss on your discoveries?
Yes. Going back to the cave art again, there was another image which I spotted, and I was sat there. I can see this face, but it's only half a face. Again, it's the left eye, and you can clearly see the iris and the pupil and an eyebrow, and this downturned mouth with these two nostrils. That was basically the full image. So I decided to mirror that again on the direct vertical. This full face appears. It's humanoid. It's not human, but it is humanoid. It's hard to describe exactly what it looks like, but it looks like as though it's got like a tough outer leathery skin with these really drawn-in cheeks, a pointy chin. But what was fascinating was that while I was discussing this online, someone posted the face that had been found in Leonardo da Vinci's Mother and Child painting. Mm-hmm. And the similarities between the two are absolutely incredible. They are stunning. There's at least 12 similarities between them. And according to what Leonardo had done once, he disappeared for 2 years. And apparently he spent some time in a cave. And I want to know what cave did he find? And does this cave contain art very similar to the Chauvet art? If so, Leonardo learnt his skill from this possible cave art, if it exists. And I'm trying to set up a mission to go and find it.
So there's actual writings that Leonardo worked in a cave in somewhere close to, in Italy, or where was it?
Yes.
Where was the location?
Okay. I've found conflicting stories as to actually where this cave is. One of them says it's in one of the mountains north of his home area, and the other one states that it is possibly somewhere around his local area to his house, basically. I've got a suspicion that it's more than likely up in the mountains rather than anywhere local. If you are going to hide this sort of thing, you're not going to want it around like a habited area. Exactly the same for the Chauvet Caves. They are so sort of out there, it's incredible. But if this cave, he's written about this sort of thing, so I'm just trying to find the actual details, but I can't quite find actually wrote.
Yeah, on your website, you actually have a photo or two of some of the rock formations that are close to caves and may indicate, according to you, kind of a reference point as to where Leonardo may have gone.
He may have been using his art to point the way to this cave without actually giving off its location. And I think he's, if I'm right with that, then this is exactly the same sort of thing that the Chauvet Cave art has done. It points you in the direction. It doesn't give you the direct answer. It aids you to read it and look at it. So if I'm right and the art that he's created is the area where this cave is, then it shouldn't take too much to find it. It's just a lot of legwork.
Mm-hmm. Before we we're on the air, Steve, you and I were discussing these new rock formations that were discovered in Jordan. You brought up something I thought was interesting, and I've always had an idea that it could be possible. It seems to me that these massive formations, and by the way, one in your book, you actually show one of these formations, the Eye of Horus or the Eye of Ra, from an extremely high elevation of perhaps, I think you're looking at it from a satellite, which is, 100 miles in the atmosphere. But it seems that these are intelligently designed references and were created by a highly intelligent people, similar to the Nazca lines, but not. Some of these are much more sophisticated. Do you see a connection with Egypt and a possible pre-dynastic people that would build something like those and create those giant figures?
Yes, there does seem to be something going on here because, again, it's circles. And I've found circles over near the ancient riverbeds in Africa there. And you can see them from the air, and they're actually marked on the cave maps. And I'm going to go back and see now. I'm going to use the maps again to see if I can locate these exact ones in Jordan, and see if it actually comes up in the cave art. But the way they've been constructed is very intriguing and interesting for me because they're literally like thousands and thousands and thousands of stones, and these are not small circles; they're big. They are rather large. The big circle called J1 is about 390 meters or 1,280 feet in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
So just that alone, you're going to be able to see it from very high up. So with the images which I've found on Google, if you've got the feline, the snake, and this Eye of Horus or Ra, you can see them. They're visible. They're from very high distances. They've been done for a reason. There's some point to all of this. There's no sort of... I can't see ancient cavemen believing in some god in the sky after creating a religion and then doing all of that just so this fictitious god in the sky can see it. That doesn't make sense. They've done it for a reason. Whoever it was has done this. It's been created, and it looks like it's all been created by hand. Without actually getting into further details or examining them up close, it looks like a lot of work, and it's been done for a reason.
Yeah, some form of symbology. And I mean, you know, it's fantasy. I mean, some people might think it's fantasy to say, well, they were built for people who were traveling in the upper atmosphere or above the Earth, several hundreds or thousands of feet, because that's the only way you can actually see them. Which, you know, leads us to say, well, there must have been some type of self-propelled machine of some kind. Or, like I said, our last guest, my last guest last week, Scott Crichton, was saying that the ancient Egyptians used balloons. I don't know really what is the possibility, but it's some form of craft or technology that allowed the observer to see it from above the actual ground.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, hot air balloons are very possible for almost any culture throughout time. Excuse me. It's a simple craft to make. It's one of the easiest. You know, you come down and the air cools down and you come drift gently down to Earth. But regards sort of powered flight, well, we've got to wait until we actually find something which goes towards that. The closest thing I think that we've come to it are those little gold figurines that were found. I think they were found in Peru, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember those little gold models?
Gold figurines? Were they? I don't know. What part of Peru?
Yeah, they were aircraft. Yeah, I can't remember exactly where they were.
Yeah, you mean those were Bolivia, where the gold.
Bolivia. Yes, that's right.
Golden planes.
They built models of those, didn't they? And they flew those models which they built. So
exactly.
You know, someone knows something.
Yeah.
Someone knows something out there.
Well, I've always said there's a part of our history that is missing, and it would have to get back. Obviously, there was some cataclysmic, and it's been recorded by the native people of the Earth that there's been numerous cataclysms that pretty much wiped the reference of a previous of a civilization off the Earth through tsunamis and through land changes that just destroyed whoever was on the planet, and then mankind had to rebuild. And so the other thing, and I've had many guests on who refer to the Vedas, and the ancient Indian Vedas speak of mankind going back hundreds of thousands of years. And yet, because there's no documents of kings and queens, Orthodox science just says, no, we don't even consider that. We will not consider that. They say to us, you will follow our history according to how we wrote it, and everything that comes up, and if we date it and it goes beyond a period of time that we establish, then it's an anomaly, and we will throw it out. And I've had archaeologists on our program who basically say that's the Orthodox point of view. In fact, I remember reading a book years ago, and I can't remember the author's name, but he actually said that they physically, if they get a reading on a pot chart or some organic material that is goes back more than a few thousand years, according to the current Orthodox view, they actually changed the setting on the machine, and so. But this has been going on for a long time, and the thing is, you just got to keep hammering away and show and reveal and keep working towards science. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Heather Lynn, a true scientist in every respect of the word, says that Orthodox science is stuck in the past, and they just refuse to view any other form of evidence that the history of our planet is any older than, you know, a few thousand years. So, hey, Steve, we're getting down to the last part of our program. I just want to ask you, is there anything else regarding this Mars discovery that you want to tell us about? Because I'm going to be posting some photographs of yours today from your book. I call it Notes from Our Conversation. And I just want you to tell us anything else you'd like to tell us, and also we'll also reference where you might be this year or next year, and any other research you want to uncover.
Yeah, I mean, basically, every day I'm trying to keep up with everything, all the information that's coming in on Facebook and various other places regards all of these images and stuff that we're finding on Mars. And it's going over it all. I believe George Haas has recently posted something which I've got to confirm and have a look at. There's one image there which he's found, I believe. It's very, very similar to one of these Masonic symbols with the compass.
Oh, on Mars?
Opened up, yeah. Yes,
wow.
yes. And he's highlighted.
Are you going to post
that?
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I'll drag that out for you. Yeah,
okay.
And of course, I've found something of very, very similar design in the cave art as well.
God.
I mean, George's image is a mirror image from what he's seen, and my image is a mirror image from what I've seen. I don't know how George has got his mirror image, but mine, again, is on the direct vertical, and they are very, very similar. And it's fascinating how these are coming up in this particular manner. It's just astonishing that this sort of stuff's going on. So
wow.
One way or another, we're sort of getting to the bottom of it all bit by bit. And eventually it's all going to come together and, you know, watch this space. We'll see where it takes us.
Okay, so fantastic new book. It's called... Chauvet, The Dream Unlocked, and the author who's been my guest today is Steve Meads. Steve is a new author. It's a fascinating book. Now, if they want to get a hold of the book, can they order it on Amazon, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, it's on Amazon. There's a link for that particular page on my site. In case that they go to the one that's, there's two. There's the Amazon the US site, and there's a .co.uk site. So they'll be able to find it on either one.
Okay, and what is the charge in US dollars for that digital e-book?
Cool, now you're asking.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head. I can't recall.
Okay.
Yep.
Anyhow,
it's
they'll
on,
find
it's
on,
it.
They'll
online.
Find it. I think it was pretty reasonable. I think it was like $12 or whatever. Okay, great. And Steve, are you going to be speaking in the U.S. or any place else in the next few months? We're almost at the end of 2014, but people are always interested in hearing what our authors are up to. So, what do you have plans for the next 60 days?
Next 60 days, not much going on, you know, staying at home and sorting things out here and carrying on with my research. There might be something coming up in the next year because I have been in contact with a couple of people who are interested in talking to me further about what I've got. I'd like to have another conversation with Graham Hancock at some point, as I've spoken to him before, and we've had a good couple of conversations on the telephone, so of course... you know, and Mike Bauer, I've been talking to him as well, and I believe he's using some of my book again for his new research. So it's going to be interesting to see what he comes up with. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the new year and seeing what happens.
Fantastic. My guest has been Steve Meads, the book, Chauvet, The Dream Unlocked. Thanks for joining me, Steve, and much luck on your fantastic research. I'll keep a close eye on it and continue to publish what you show us on the Facebook page.
Thank you very much for having me, Cliff. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Great. Yeah. Much luck to you. That's it for today's show. I do want to remind you all out there that Chris Dunn, the amazing Chris Dunn, will be my guest next week. And he has quite a bit to discuss on his new research. But, you know, the thing about Chris Dunn that's fascinating is he is the engineer that basically revealed that power machinery was used in creating the Great Pyramid. But not only the Great Pyramid, many, many, many of the structures that we find in the Giza Plateau. But Chris has since the publishing of his book, Advanced Machining in Egypt, has traveled to other parts and has quite a bit to say. So stay tuned next week. That's November 8th, right here on Earth Ancients Radio. Join us and listen to Chris Dunn. He's a fascinating author and really a foundation for a lot of the investigations that are going on today in many of the ancient sites around the world. So have a great week.